Bannerman got to his feet. Everything was sunshine and brightness, and all his insides seemed to want to slip out of the hole the dog had torn in him. The car, the police radio. Behind him, the dog was distracted. He was throwing himself crazily against the Pinto's buckled driver's side door again and again, barking and snarling. Bannerman staggered toward the cruiser. His face was as white as pie dough. His lips were blue-gray. It was the biggest dog he had ever seen, and it had gutted him for Christ's sake. And why was everything so hot and so bright? His intestines were slipping through his fingers. He reached the car door. He could hear the radio under the dash crackling out its message. Should have called in first. That's procedure. You never argue with procedure. But if I'd believed that, I never would have called Smith in the Dodd case. Vicky, Katrina, I'm sorry. The boy. He had to get help for the boy. He almost fell and grabbed the edge of the door for support. And then he heard the dog coming for him, and he began to scream again. He tried to hurry. If he could only get the door shut. Oh, God, if only he could close the door before the dog got to him again. Oh, God. Oh, God. Tad was screaming again, screaming and clawing at his face, whipping his head from side to side, as Cujo thudded against the door, making it rock. Tad, don't. Honey, please don't. Want Daddy? Want Daddy? Want Daddy? Suddenly, it stopped. Holding Tad against her breasts, Donna turned her head in time to see Cujo strike the man as he tried to swing into his car. The force of it knocked his hand loose from the door. After that, she couldn't watch. She wished she could block her ears somehow as well from the sounds of Cujo finishing with whoever it had been. He hid, she thought hysterically. He heard the car coming, and he hid. The porch door. Now was the time to go for the porch door while Cujo was occupied. She put her hand on the door handle, yanked it, and shoved. Nothing happened. The door wouldn't open. Cujo had finally buckled the frame enough to seal it shut. Tad, she whispered feverishly. Tad, change places with me. Quick, Tad! Tad! Tad was shivering all over. His eyes had rolled up again.
Ducks,
he said gutturally.
Go see the ducks. Monster, worse. Daddy, ah.
He was convulsing again. His arms flopped bonelessly. She began to shake him, crying his name over and over again, trying to keep his mouth open, trying to keep the airway open. There was a monstrous buzzing in her head, and she began to be afraid that she was going to faint. This was hell. They were in hell. The morning sun streamed into the car, creating the greenhouse effect, dry and remorseless. At last, Tad quieted. His eyes had closed again. His breathing was very rapid and shallow. When she put her fingers on his wrist, she found a runaway pulse, weak, thready, and irregular. She looked outside. Cujo had hold of the man's arm and was shaking it the way a puppy will shake a rag toy. Every now and then he would pounce on the limp body. The blood, there was so much blood. As if aware he was being observed, Cujo looked up, his muzzle dripping. He looked at her with an expression. Could a dog have an expression, she wondered madly, that seemed to convey both sternness and pity. And again Donna had the feeling that they had come to know each other intimately, and that there could be no stopping or resting for either of them until they had explored this terrible relationship to some ultimate conclusion. It pounced on the man in the blood-spattered blue shirt and the khaki pants again. The dead man's head lolled on his neck. She looked away, her empty stomach sour with hot acid. Her torn leg ached and throbbed. She had torn the wound there open yet again. Tad, how was he now? He's terrible, her mind answered inexorably. So what are you going to do? You're his mother. What are you going to do? What could she do? Would it help Tad if she went out there and got herself killed? The policeman. Someone had sent the policeman up here, and when he didn't come back... Please, she croaked, soon, please. It was 8 o'clock now, and outside it was still relatively cool, 77 degrees. By noon, the recorded temperature at the Portland Jetport would be 102, a new record for that date. Townsend and Andy Mason arrived at the State Police Barracks in Scarborough at 8:30 a.m. Mason let Townsend run with the ball, This was his bailiwick, not Mason's, and there was not a thing wrong with Andy's ears. The duty officer told him that Stephen Kemp was on his way back to Maine. There had been no problem about that, but Kemp still wasn't talking. His van had been given a thorough going over by Massachusetts lab technicians and forensic experts. Nothing had turned up which might indicate a woman and a boy had been held in the back. But they had found a nice little pharmacy in the van's wheel well. Marijuana, some cocaine in an Anison bottle, 3 amyl nitrate poppers, and 2 speedy combinations of the type known as Black Beauties. It gave them a handy hook to hang Mr. Kemp on for the time being. "That pinto," Andy said to Townsend, bringing them each a cup of coffee. "Where's that fucking pinto of hers?" Townsend shook his head. "Has Bannerman called anything in?"
"Nope."
"Well, give him a shout. Tell him I want him down here when they bring Kemp in. It's his jurisdiction, and I guess he's got to be the questioning officer, technically at least."
Townsend came back 5 minutes later looking puzzled. "I can't get him, Mr. Mason. Their dispatcher's tried him and says he must not be in his car."
"Christ, he's probably having coffee down at the cozy corner." "Well, fuck him. He's out of it."
Andy Mason lit a fresh pell-mell, coughed, and then grinned at Townsend. "Think we can handle this Kemp without him?" Townsend smiled back.
"Oh, I think we can manage."
Mason nodded.
"This thing is starting to look bad, Mr. Townsend. Very bad."
"It's not good.
I'm beginning to wonder if this Kemp didn't bury them in the ditch beside some farm road between Castle Rock and Twickenham."
Mason smiled again.
"But we'll crack him, Mr. Townsend. I've cracked tough nuts before this."
"Yes, sir," Townsend said respectfully. He believes Mason had.
"We'll crack him if we have to sit him in this office and sweat him for 2 days.
Townsend slipped out every 15 minutes or so, trying to make contact with George Bannerman. He knew Bannerman only slightly, but he held a higher opinion of him than Mason did, and he thought Bannerman deserved to be warned that Andy Mason was on the prod for him. When he still hadn't reached Bannerman, by 10 o'clock he began to feel worried. He also began to wonder if he should mention Bannerman's continued silence to Mason, or if he should hold his peace. Roger Breakstone arrived in New York City at 8:49 a.m. on the Eastern Shuttle, cabbed into the city, and checked into the Biltmore a little before 9:30. "The reservation was for 2? The desk clerk asked. "My partner has been called home on an emergency."
"What a pity," the desk clerk said indifferently, and gave Roger a card to fill out. While he did so, the desk clerk talked to the cashier about the Yankee tickets he had gotten for the following weekend.
Roger lay down in his room, trying to nap, but in spite of his poor rest the night before, no sleep would come. Donna screwing some other man, Vic holding on to all of that, trying to anyway, in addition to this stinking mess over a red, sugary kiddie's cereal. Now Donna and Tad had disappeared. Vic had disappeared. Everything had somehow gone up in smoke this last week. Neatest trick you ever saw. Presto changeo. Everything's a big pile of shit. His head ached. The ache came in big, greasy, thumping waves. At last he got up, not wanting to be alone with his bad head and his bad thoughts any longer. He thought he might as well go on over to Summers Marketing and Research at 47th and Park and spread some gloom around there. After all, what else did AdWorks pay them for? He stopped in the lobby for aspirin and walked over. The walk did nothing for his head, but it did give him a chance to renew his hate-hate relationship with New York. "Not back here," he thought. "I'll go to work throwing cartons of Pepsi on a truck before I bring Althea and the girls back here." Summers was on the 14th floor of a big, stupid-looking, energy-inefficient skyscraper. The receptionist smiled and nodded when Roger identified himself. "Mr. Hewitt has just stepped out for a few minutes. Is Mr. Trenton with you?"
"No, he was called home."
"Well, I have something for you. It just came in this morning." She handed Roger a telegram in a yellow envelope. It was addressed to V. Trenton / R. Breakstone / AdWorks / Care of Image Eye Studios. Rob had forwarded it to Summers Marketing late yesterday. Roger tore it open and saw at once that it was from Old Man Sharp and that it was fairly long. "Walking papers, here we come," he thought, and read the telegram. The telephone woke Vic up at a few minutes before 12. Otherwise, he might have slept most of the afternoon away as well. His sleep had been heavy.